Success isn't just about what you achieve. It's about living a life that reflects your values and priorities. Welcome to Engineer Your Success, the podcast that helps you lead with intention and live fulfilled.
Leadership comes with high expectations, too many responsibilities, too little time, and the constant pressure to keep up. If you're feeling stretched then, you're not alone. At Engineer Your Success, we help leaders take back control so that they can lead with confidence, delegate effectively, and stop running on empty. You don't have to choose between success and sanity. Let's build a leadership plan that works for you. Visit EngineerYourSuccessNow.com today, because thriving isn't just for others, it's for you. Welcome to the Engineer Your Success podcast. My name is Dr. James Bryan, and I'm your host for the show. Today, we are having a conversation with Mr. Aaron Shavel. Aaron, can you tell the podcast listening audience a little bit about yourself?
Hi, James. Thanks for having me. My name is Aaron Shavel. I'm a New York City-based civil engineer. I've spent the last 10 years working for top New York City general contractors specializing in rail and transit construction, mostly for the MTA, New York City Transit and Long Island Railroad, doing train station construction, rehabilitation, upgrades of all kinds of sorts. Most recently, I was project manager for a $150 million station upgrade for the MTA with stations across the whole city. I'm in the process of a minor career change or refocus into infrastructure policy. So I've recently joined the Alliance for Innovation and Infrastructure, which is the only nationwide infrastructure-focused think tank advocating for those changes.
No, it's awesome, Aaron. So can you tell us a little bit about your career arc or journey? I know you've been working as a general contractor. Where'd you go to school? And tell us a little bit more how your career progressed.
Sure. So I went to RPI, Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, engineering school in upstate New York in North America, original civil engineering degree in the U.S. Always knew I wanted to go in construction, knew I wanted to be in New York, and kind of fell into this transit world. Started out as a field engineer doing signal upgrades. As I, got promoted into project engineer, started working on station upgrades and all the architectural components. Eventually moved up to APM, overseeing a bunch of the different subcontractors on what I think was one of my favorite projects, Elmont Station out on Long Island. And then eventually got promoted to project manager, overseeing a large EA initiative project across the city. I worked for both general contractors and then electrically focused general contractors, which was a huge part of my growth, just being exposed to all the different trades. I was exposed to everything. And I think that was a huge part of my ability to move between these projects and roles.
Okay. So you mentioned that you're shifting into infrastructure policy. But before we talk about that, what made you get to that point in your career to say, I think I want to do something different?
Well, a few things. One, there's some very exciting changes in my personal life that I had to step back and take stock. I think I've spent the last 10 years inside the belly of the beast. I'm starting to understand how we build things. I think there's a lot of ways we can build things better, both from the AEC side of the industry, but also from the policy and in many cases, how the public agencies or government agencies implement these things. And as I've started to go through these different kinds of contracts, I've started to ask myself, why are we making these kinds of decisions? Clearly, there is large public interest in these infrastructure projects, which is maybe not the case 15, 20 years ago. We have these trillions of dollars. Are we using them to the best of our ability? As I've gone through these projects, I've seen things and said, I see we're trying to make an effort as a society, as a city, as a state, or maybe a larger nationwide conversation. But are we doing it the right way? I think that's been part of the spark or interest in that career focus.
That's interesting. So what makes it the right way as opposed to the Aaron Shavel way? How are you defining the right way?
I think a very easy one is project delivery method. I think there's now starting to be a wider acceptance of design build. I'm a huge proponent of that. I think it puts a lot of agency back into the industry, the expertise of the designers, of the contractors, and I think it streamlines projects. And then similarly, I think private-public partnership has a huge role to play in that as well. Right? Private money making the right decisions, choosing what are the most effective projects for the social good rather than some arbitrary metric that's being done at an agency level.
So wait a minute. So the private sector is going to choose a project based on social good, not return on investment? Or is return on investment included in that calculation?
Both, right? There's ways to calibrate it. So the return on investment, whatever that return is, you can quantify it. Unfortunately, when you do it through the public sector, there's not always transparency into that calculation.
So most
people that I talk to that are in the general contracting world, they live, die, eat, sleep, bleed, GC, right? And so you strike me as one of those types of people, right? And maybe I'm wrong, but what's making you, again, is it the pull towards the infrastructure policy side, or did you experience something in the GC 24-hour cycle side that is helping you to make this decision?
Well, first off, I think you kind of pegged me correctly. I love and loved working for a GC. I think that's where all the excitement is, where a lot of the decision-making gets made. That's where you got to go out there and figure out how it actually gets built. It's not an abstract decision. It's not something on paper. So yeah, I loved working as a general contractor. One of the things I think is so great about it is it's part of the industry where you have to be incredibly passionate about this and want to be in that environment. Like you said, it's 24/7. It's very high octane, but it's also incredibly rewarding. You get to see the tangible efforts at the end of the day. It's a building, a road, an airport, a train station, whatever it is. But part of that overdrive and excitement can also be all-encompassing. So I think there is a lot. It's no secret, right? There is mental health issues and burnout in our industry, partially proof and validated by your audience and interest in your content. So yeah, I spent 8 years kind of in that. It gets very overwhelming. And I think I needed to take a step back and remind myself that I'm very proud to be a civil engineer, very proud to be a general contractor, but I'm also all these other wonderful things too, like a husband and a friend and a son. And those are things you have to balance as well. So it's a tricky thing to navigate between being fully focused on your career and loving what you do, but also making sure you're not losing yourself in that.
So at any time in that 10-year time frame, do you consider that you were burnt out?
A couple times. Yeah, absolutely. I guess one thing to consider is the project cycle. They can be cyclical. You go through stints where you're working 3 months, 4 months, 24/7 around the clock, and it kills you. But the hope is that at the end of that, you close that and you have some time to recover. So yeah, there was definitely some times in my career where I had to take a beat, take a week and breathe. That's one thing to do in your early 20s, another to do in your early 30s. And I think it's something that regardless of what your career is, but especially in something like our industry that is so high octane, and then of course has the machismo attitude to it as well.
I think that's really important. When I was in my 20s, I defined success a certain way. When I got married, the definition of success started to change. Then when kids came, that's another definition because you have an added element to your life. So I think it's logical for us to have those differing definitions as we grow and mature in life. You talked about experiencing some burnout, the ebb and flow of the work and times you had to take some time off. Was there a particular time where you can recall thinking this has got to change?
Yeah. And I think it was as much about being a very newly minted manager as it was the work itself. I went from being the number two of an 8-person team on $60 million to being the number one of 45 people on $150 million, right? There was very little ramp up in my managerial experience. On an 8-person team, everybody does everything. There's an assignment. You can delegate some things, but you see it all the way through. Now, as I transitioned to being a project manager on a much bigger scale, as an engineer, you take pride in your ability and you want to be able to do everything yourself. My manager, my executive leadership gave me a tongue lashing. Hey, you're not a project engineer anymore. You're a PM. You have to understand that there's divisions of labor and your time is spent best doing certain things. And I ignored that, worked myself into the ground. And then I was able to take a step back and realize I've built and developed this great team that trusts one another, that can collaborate with one another. I can now use it, right? That I have folks who have strong suits and can pick up assignments and it doesn't have to fall to me.
Now, the one question that I have, you said you built the team. Did you assemble the team? Or did you build the team?
A little bit of both. So for better or worse, the team we had was made up a lot of folks or, you know, young engineers right out of school, people who had come from slightly different roles and were in their role for the first time. So field engineers who got promoted to project engineers with massive expanse of responsibilities, field engineers who worked for utility companies were now expected as project engineers to run full electrical. One of our most experienced, like technical electrical engineer, like fantastic engineer, had never worked for the MTA. He'd only ever worked for another owner. So incredibly talented and eager team, but effectively everyone, myself including, were doing their role for the first time. which was an exciting hurdle to overcome.
What were some of the strategies or tips that you used to help you overcome that hurdle?
You know how to solve tough technical problems, but leading people, that's a different challenge. Stepping into leadership means more than just knowing your stuff. It's about inspiring, communicating, and navigating challenges with confidence. At Engineer Your Success, we help technical pros like you grow into leaders who just don't manage the work, but lead the people who do. If you're ready to lead with clarity and impact, visit engineeryoursuccessnow.com today, because thriving isn't just for others, it's for you.
I think the two ones are communication and expectation. It's really hard for anybody to do anything unless the expectations for them are set out. And again, you have to communicate those things and continually communicate how people are performing, what is the expectation, what the next steps are. So expectations were big. One thing that I stole from a previous manager is we are the best prepared people in any room we walk into. Like, we're not always right. We may not be the smartest, but we've done our homework. We know what the contract says. We know what the meeting's about. We have our agenda. We have our notes. And that's how you kind of overcome some of those experience shortfalls. So yeah, communication and expectations, I think were two really important points for our team moving forward.
So if there's somebody listening here who is facing a similar transition, they are moving from a role where they've had limited management or managing a smaller team. Now they're moving to manage a bigger team. We've talked about expectations and communication. What other tips would you give them?
Again, going back to my previous point, you can't solve all of the problems yourself. You need to have faith and trust in the folks around you. And I think it goes back to communicating that you need help and what those expectations are. And then the other thing is patience. A problem comes across my desk and my first impulse is to just drop everything else I'm doing and solve that problem right now. And you have to prioritize. Like, there's certain problems that you can kick down the road and either one of your team members will solve it. And if it's not solved by next Tuesday, then you have to get involved. But you have to give folks the chance to solve these problems themselves and trust in their ability to do so.
What would you say is the main benefit of doing that?
One, you can't do it all yourself, so you avoid burning yourself out. Okay. And two, that's how you show trust in the folks you have around you. You instill confidence in them and you show them, hey, this is how you should go about approaching it, but you have to do it yourself. And if you have problems, then you come to me. That's what I'm here for. I'm here kind of a servitude leadership, right? When you need help, I'm here to help you, but you have to take the first crack at it.
By communicating your expectations on the front end, you're giving them the opportunity to grow. If you never give them that opportunity, they won't develop the muscle memory to do that same task or similar task in the future.
Give a man a fish, teach a man a fish.
Yeah. So one of the things you've talked about is building or assembling this team. What were some of the key things or key elements that you think is important for people to remember when they're building a team?
So I've been very fortunate to spend my whole career with five or six managers in this environment of train your replacement mentality, right? Okay. The idea being that we are all growing, succeeding, and going up together. So, you know, I have a project engineer who has shown interest in this one thing. They have no involvement in this meeting, but I bring them in. I say, hey, listen around. And I think that was something pivotal to my growth and something I tried to do with the engineers on my team. I think it's important to preach the idea of jack of all trades. Be exposed to as many different things as possible. And you may find a specialty in a little niche. It could be structural or communications, but it's pivotal that you understand all of the other different disciplines and trades that you're going to interact with. So the more things you're exposed to, the better rounded engineer and team member you are.
Train your replacement and the whole concept that we all grow together. So where are you growing now?
I think that is still an open-ended question.
Yeah.
This transition period has given me the opportunity to look at our industry in a really academic way, in a way that I haven't had the opportunity to in a long time. And I'm getting the opportunity to talk to interesting and very smart folks like yourself in all different parts of our industry. I'm very confident I'm not leaving construction or AEC in general because it's fun to build stuff. But I'm enjoying seeing it from a bunch of different angles, whether that's from the owner's perspective, from the engineers and designers' perspective, and all the other different subcomponents of our industry.
Okay. So Let's go 5 years to the future. What's happening in Aaron Schaible's life?
That's a great question. I'm still trying to figure that out. One thing that, you know, I was going to mention earlier when you said about career growth and as you start to figure out what it is you want to do or where you want to go, I'm a big believer in written manifestation. Where do you want to be in 5 and 10 years? And all that is to say, that page has always been filled. I've always known what it is. For the first time, I'm not quite sure. And I think that's a really exciting thing. And that's part of this whole career refocus of figuring out what exactly that is.
Okay. So that page has yet to be written. It's on the way.
Absolutely. You'll be okay. The first to know.
When you do get that vision, feel free to email us to come back on the podcast, even if we do a little mini episode about your vision and where you're going, because I think it's pretty cool. You've had a plan for what you've wanted to do. You've continued to work that plan. And now you're in this spot where you're like, okay, I know I want to look at this infrastructure policy area, but I don't know what life's going to look like in 5 or 10 years.
I think it's another window to see the industry from another perspective, see where the going trends are, what people are interested in. And then again, talk to great folks like you.
No, it's pretty interesting. I had a similar trajectory in that when I finished with my PhD, my grand plan, it was not a very detailed plan. My grand plan was to go work in industry for 3 to 5 years, then work for a state agency for 3 to 5 years, and then look at things from a national level. After that, I would go start a consulting firm, maybe go to a university and teach. That was what I laid out when I first finished. Well, pretty much I checked off all of those boxes. I worked in the private sector for 3 to 5 years and for a state organization for 3 to 5 years. And I spent about 15 years working for the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine as part of the Transportation Research Board, looking at things from a national level. The big change is when I finished looking at things from a national level, it's like, you know, I think I want to do something a little bit different. I still want to do something entrepreneurial. I want to do something in the private sector. So that's where I started Engineer Success, executive coaching, consulting, leadership development, to take some of the lessons that I've learned throughout my career and bring them to people in the industry.
Yeah, I know the first time we spoke, we talked about your journey and the service you're trying to provide. Clearly, I know I'm not the only one in this position. I know this is something I've shared with colleagues before, right? There's so many different paths and other components that come into our industry. It's great to have a resource to kind of navigate all of it.
Yeah, I'm here to help folks navigate through that and to be a sounding board and a thought partner to work through the issues that may come to mind. Many times people have a sense of what they want to do or the direction that they need to go. Sometimes they're just afraid to speak it out loud. And creating a safe space for them to speak it out loud and not to judge them helps them move further along.
Yeah, absolutely. When I start to have a little bit more clarity in what that is, I'll be sure to call you.
No, and that's fine, Aaron. Typically, what I'll do at this point, we're going to shift things around.
Okay.
I ask my guests to say, okay, you become the interviewer. I am the interviewee. You can ask me any question that you like.
So, James, what was the most fulfilling project you worked on?
The most fulfilling project that I worked on was when I first joined the Transportation Research Board. Eventually was the lead staff in the Sharp 2 renewal focus area. So this was like a $70 million applied research program. The initial part of the program, we laid out what the different research projects were, helped contractors, universities actually do it, whether it was accelerated bridge construction processes that you're going to go through and work with the utilities when you have these large construction projects, whether it was using existing pavements in place to build long-lasting roadways. There were lots of projects that really helped move the infrastructure industry forward. The most rewarding part of that is there was a follow-on program for implementation. We got to work with state DOTs, contractors, the Federal Highway Administration, AASHTO, on helping to implement the projects that I managed to research on. So it was a great space for me to see. We spent years developing the tools, and now we're moving to help implement those tools.
I think that's awesome. I think that's what all of us love about this industry, right? Something goes from concept to actuality. Like, there's tangible proof of our hard work.
Yep.
So to even go from policy all the way through implementation and strategy is really cool.
Yeah.
What's another question to ask you?
Any question.
in your new role in engineering, your success focusing on providing guidance for folks in their engineering careers, do you miss being a practitioner and being involved in hands-on engineering work or the kind of stuff you were doing before?
Do I miss practicing engineering? Yes and no. Yes, I do from the standpoint of what would push me technically, working on interesting projects, looking at how we can solve complex highway maintenance issues, whether these are local or national issues. The part that makes up for that is when I'm working with a client and you can see the light bulb come on, or you get an email of someone thanking you for something that you did that helped them move forward in their life. That more than makes up for whatever I would miss from a technical perspective.
Totally. I can imagine how powerful that is.
Yeah. I really want to thank you for being a guest on the podcast. Is there anything else that you would like to share with our podcast listening audience?
I think one thing I've talked about throughout, whether executive leadership or career growth or training replacement, is the idea of continuing to be curious. Regardless of your role, there's always other areas you can dive into to bolster your interests, make you a more competent technical engineer, a better leader, or just a better colleague, friend, partner. So yeah, continue to be curious.
All right. If someone in the listening audience would like to get in contact with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
LinkedIn. I'm very active on there. I'll respond to messages and look forward to hearing from you.
Okay. We will put a link to your LinkedIn profile in the episode show notes. So Aaron, I want to thank you for being here on the podcast. And I'm going to end this episode like I end every episode. And that's this. Many people know what to do. Fewer people know how to do it. And there's a select group of people that actually follow through and are doing it and are able to live the life of their dreams. Aaron, I want to thank you for being part of that select few.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I enjoyed our conversation.